Welcome to the Brownline Church Podcast. My name is Vince Brackett. I am one of the pastors at Brownline Church. And if you are hearing this, I am on sabbatical right now with my family and away from the community for about 8 weeks of rest and recovery and trying to listen to God in a way that is outside of the weekly responsibilities of normal life. If you are somebody who has given financially to Brownline Church at some point, I am so grateful because it is your donations and gifts that allow our church to function at all and for the financial board to be able to offer me something as wonderful and humanizing as a sabbatical. So thank you. Here's our most recent Sunday message. Let us know what you think in Discord or shooting us an email, brownlinechurch@gmail.com, or share it with a friend if it helps you.
But we are continuing on this morning in our summer theme of talking about embracing beliefs. We've been talking through this process of arriving at really encouraging and sustaining beliefs that have formed us, beliefs that we come back to time and time again. And these beliefs aren't just these nice little concepts that live in our head, but they have lived out consequences in the world. What we believe shapes what we do, how we act, how we speak. And I'm so glad that I get to have conversations with people in our community as we explore these different beliefs. And it's been so fun to hear more of your stories and beliefs in the chat on Discord. So please feel free to keep putting things in there so that we can come back to them after as well. So, good morning. Hi, Brad. It's so fun to get to have you up here today. Can you just start by introducing yourself a bit?
All right, so yeah, I'm Brad Fruhoff. I've been coming here a couple of years now, I think. Grew up in the Illinois, greater, you know, Chicago land suburbs. And let's see, have two boys, 12 and 15, who are not here today because they're 12 and 15. And I am a freelance writer and editor. And amateur theologian, I suppose. Kind of geek out. When I told my 12-year-old I was going to do this today, he said, that sounds like your kind of thing. And I was like, what's my kind of thing? And he said, talking about nerdy stuff to a bunch of people. So thanks.
So fun. And you've been up here before in the past for a message with Vince. So it's just really nice to have you back up here again. Can you start us off just by talking a bit about your past experiences with belief-shaping communities or different church settings?
Sure. I was raised Christian, and I went to the local Methodist church growing up. And then in high school, I went to Willow Creek. Many of you know is the big mega church around here. When I went to college, and I went to a Christian college, but now I had to choose what churches I was going to go to since moving away from home, and I always gravitated towards places where I felt like A, people wanted to be there, and B, like the spirit was moving, like something was happening, and so that meant it wasn't really about denomination so much. I've worshipped with Quakers, with Anglican, E-Free, sort of emergent church, Vineyard Church. I've been around a little bit. But yeah, like it's always been about like people who are there to like encounter God, and small groups has always been a big part of it for me too. Like people, churches where they encourage community through small groups.
Yeah, I just always think it's helpful to know where people are coming from in these conversations and those different experiences that have formed us. So for today's topic, we are talking about mystery and beliefs. So Brad, why did you want to talk about mystery?
Yeah, so it was a couple weeks ago you were introducing this series, and you had also meant like to ask me already. You framed it originally as like thinking about we talk about sort of the journey of faith a lot of people are on. We start with an original order, and then there's a period of disorder, or what we're calling deconstruction these days. And then in Richard Rohr's framework, there's a real growth requires a reordering. And so reordering means figuring out what you like believe now that you've taken apart some of the old beliefs. And when I was thinking about that, one of the things that has always been important to me is needing something that calls me beyond myself. I feel like it's very easy to get caught in my own head. I think that's true for most of us, get caught in our own worlds, our own problems. And I think we always need something that calls us beyond ourselves. And for me, the spiritual version of that is mystery, or that's the sort of big philosophical or theological term for it. But yeah, that's really what it is. It's a mystery as that which calls us beyond ourselves. And I'm kind of looking at my outline and wondering if I'm going to call an audible here, but I guess I'll start by grounding it in a story of personally, just because then we can unpack like what I mean by it. When I was doing my master's program at Portland State, I had come out of a Christian school. I'd been learning a lot of Christian language for thinking about meaning and reality and truth and how we and how I engage in the world. I got to this very secular public institution and was reading all the French, you know, postmodernists that all the conservative theologians were scared of and telling us warnings about. And but I was reading them, I was like, these guys aren't that scary exactly. They're just very challenging. Mm-hmm. And challenging in a way that I was a little distressing. And in fact, the more I like engaged with them, the more I started being compelled by some of what they were arguing. And what that started to do, though, was really take apart important parts of my faith that have been important to me, the intellectual parts of my faith. Not that they were disproving them so much as questioning the ground on which I'd built those things. And it actually sent me ultimately into this kind of crisis of faith, and I spent a long time praying and meditating and trying to figure out, like, what to do with this. Like, is this the right field for me, studying English? Or if I like, am I doing the right thing with being in a church and following this faith? I was reading like, you know, The Dark Night of the Soul. I was like, other people have been through this. There was a point though where I sort of bottomed out spiritually and emotionally, and I thought, well, okay, if I really am not sure I believe in this stuff, like, can I actually like say I don't? Like, and I was thinking of I think it's in Proverbs, the fool says in his heart there is no God. And I was like, well, it's either true or it's not true. If it's not true, then I can just say there's no God and not be a fool. So I tried it. I just like literally said it out loud, there is no God. And I tried it a few different ways. And what was weird to me about it was intellectually, like I understood like the meaning of the words, but like emotionally and spiritually, I couldn't assent to it. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. I was like, well, okay, whatever. Like, there's no God, you don't believe that. And what I realized is that what was important for me about this is the ground of my faith wasn't actually all the intellectual stuff. That was important to me. But there was something underneath that, and I've come to call that mystery. In the broad sense. Yeah,
it reminds me, there's a pastor and theologian that I really enjoy the work of, Nadia Boltz Weber, and she talks about like, yeah, I've tried to be an atheist. It's really hard. Like, it didn't last long. And I do think that it's something about that emotional factor, this deeply rooted, we talk about being rooted oftentimes here as like rooted in tradition, but I think there's something internal that you can be really just personally rooted into, and that even when you're going through times of turmoil, it might not be like completely uprooted. It can be destabilizing for sure, but there's something deeper that kind of calls you back. But yeah, I'd love to explore a little bit more of what you actually mean by mystery, because I think this is one of those broad terms, whether you are thinking about it philosophically or theologically, whatever it may be, that mystery can mean a lot of different things.
Sure. So in short, I mean that which is ungraspable or what we can't quite get our arms around when we try to think about it. And it's really a sort of medieval sense of the word. So like our modern sense is like the mystery stories, right? Like where it really, or like the scientific sense. Like in a modern sense, we say mystery is like something we just don't know yet, but we'll figure it out at some point. It's not that. There's also like a sort of postmodern sense, for lack of a better word, a postmodern sense where we say, there's awe, there's mystery, but that's like a kind of deferral of commitment, actually, or a cop out in some ways. It's like, it sounds spiritual to say, like, yeah, I believe in mystery and awe and stuff, but it can be a way of like, if you don't like put, give it sort of feet, like it can be a way of like avoiding actually believing. You can kind of say, yeah, I'm spiritual because I believe in mystery, but like you're really not thinking about it. The sense I think of it as is that which we encounter, and it in the terms of the like language Vince likes to use, it beckons us, it calls us beyond ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's because it's not something we can ever get our head around. We're not going to know it eventually, but it's something there that demands a response.
Yeah.
So it's another way, like you could just call it spiritual experience, I suppose. So I'm being a little philosophical and intellectual about it, because I think for a lot of us, we have experiences like this all the time. But what I'm actually suggesting is it's some of these things that we'll talk about in a minute is these things aren't just good vibes or feeling good. It's not just like I like singing in church. It's like those moments when you know something has like leveled up in your experience, right? Something more is happening, and you realize your world is growing, your sense of self is growing beyond what you're accustomed to. And I think it's important to my faith to believe that is a real experience. It's not just neurons firing. It's not just emotion. It's not just me convincing myself of a story that feels good. Because if it just feels good, then like other people have stories that feel good that I think are abhorrent, and how are we going to settle that? So for me, it's important. It's a leap of faith, but it's important to me to go, yeah, that is real. There's something there that's resonating with an underlying reality, and which I think is. For me, it's the God Jesus reveals to us, calling me to engage in the world, engage in something. And I think another term for that would be love, in the way that love is always directing away from us towards something else.
Yeah, I love that sense of direction, that it's not just this sometimes dismissive or over-spiritualizing, like, oh, we just don't know, whether that's the like dissatisfying answer to some theological question, or if it's just like, we don't quite know what happens here, that can kind of not feel as satisfying. But I think that mystery allows us to, or engaging with mystery, allows us to hold what we have right in this present moment and see the vast possibilities of what could be. Hmm. It's not this solving a mystery where there's like one set answer, one set thing you need to accomplish, but when we truly are engaging with mystery and seeing it as this directional force that beckons us beyond ourselves, that has a greater deal of involvement and participation, and you have to lean in and see just the full range of what could be. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah. And it really is like a term of like of abundance. It's infinite,
yes.
Right? It's in that sense of like, yeah, the things that you encounter that have mystery, this kind of mystery, you're never going to get over. You're never going to tire of them.
Yeah. And I think too, this brings to mind for me the power of saying, I don't know, and not in a dismissive way, but in a curious way. I can remember when I was in youth ministry and college ministry in the very beginning, I would have so much anxiety and feel so incompetent if I got asked a question and I didn't know the answer. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like I didn't know enough. I was a failure. But then I started to realize that not knowing was actually a beautiful opportunity for collaboration, because we could talk through new possibilities together and arrive at those more satisfying answers, or just arrive at like a million new questions that I wouldn't have even thought to ask on my own. And this idea of mystery inviting collaboration, I think, is really powerful, because it involves other people, it involves community, but it's also a collaboration with God to acknowledge that things are actively unfolding, and with God, with the presence of the divine or love or however you want to name that presence, it's a partnership, and it's not just us trying to figure out things on our own and arrive at answers that are pleasing to God, because then you don't even really need to rely on the divine in any way.
Yeah, right. And, you know, it's like a lot of us finding like new language, because like a lot of us grew up, if we grew up in the church, we grew up trying to like learn like what's right or what's true, right? Mm-hmm. What are the things I'm supposed to assent to, the sentences I can say that are true. But again, like in my experience, like that was ultimately challenged in a way that it like wasn't enough for faith. And mystery is just this thing that, because it's the way we experience God, it's that sort of leap of meaningful experience between me and something else in the world. Mm-hmm. You need to have a different language. It's encounter. I think love is a term for it. It's an event. I mean, all the language has to be more active.
Yeah. And so now that we have kind of a baseline of the concept of mystery, I would love for us to talk a little bit about what this looks like, played out in active ways. So for you, what does mystery look like in the sense of an embodied belief? Like, what are some of the stories that have shaped you?
Yeah, I think in terms of love, beauty, and community, and those are the sort of things that were grounding me in that crisis of faith, and the things that I still keep coming back to and like trying to have more of. So love, like falling in love, like if you ever had that experience, it's a lot of that obviously is neurons firing. It's a lot of emotion, of course, but like part of it also is just the discovery and surprise of like encountering this other person and this who's like this whole world, and you feel like your world is getting bigger, right? That and that's a real thing that's happening, and it's especially in the early days, you know, it's all about just like you can't get enough of this person, and like without getting too graphic, even physically, I think the body of the beloved is infinite. Like you just don't get tired of being with the person you love. So that was an important one for me early on.
I think we don't often or always think of people as being mysterious, unless it's in the sense of like what the heck goes on in that person's head. That's a mystery to me. But this sense of discovery, and that it's mutual too, that you are discovering things about someone else, whether it's when you're right away, like initially falling in love, or if it's years and years later. And it also, that reveals, it's like a mirror, it reveals things about yourself too that you didn't know.
And you think about like that sense of you can't get your arms around it. Like, can you ever feel like you totally have grasped everything there is to know about a person, right? Mm-hmm. So there's actually like philosophers who have actually tried to build whole ethics on just that encounter with another person, using different language. But yeah, so that was a big one that I held on to, is like this love I have is something, means something. Mm-hmm. It's real, and it's a real experience, not just of like good feelings and of some kind of social good, but of some transcendence, something that is actually beyond me.
Yeah, and Vince actually used the language of falling in love as a way to think about embracing belief maybe like a month or so ago, and that sometimes we think of talking about our beliefs as this like dig your heels in, make an argument and win the argument mentality. But with this idea and language of falling in love, it's vulnerable, and you have to lean in and you have to engage with the mystery of it all.
Yeah, that's probably... all these, I think, require some vulnerability. I don't know if there's a way to encounter mystery meaningfully without being vulnerable, being open to it in some way. So beauty, there's a lot of ways beauty plays into my life. One of the big moments, though, early on for me was we were traveling in Europe. We went to the Louvre, and at the end of this hall, there's the sculpture of the Winged Victory. I don't know if you've seen it. It was in the photo for this week. It's a headless, armless statue of some kind of sort of winged figure. Christians might call it like an angel. I think it's supposed to be like the goddess Nike. But when you come up, I've seen pictures of sculpture you have to see in person to really appreciate. Mm-hmm. I had not really had a true encounter with a sculpture before in the way that I had with this thing. I got in front of this thing, and was looking up at it, and it's, we all know it's marble, it's made out of stone, but it's, you'd swear it was wet, you'd swear the wind is blowing on it, and just thinking, like, this thing's thousands of years old, and, but somehow there's a profound, this person had this, whoever sculpted this had this profound intuition about beauty and the material world, and turned something hard into something soft and wet, and create, yeah, this, the ability, that movement is stunning when you really like encounter, when you have that feeling, both of not just like being entertained by the artwork, like we're familiar with that feeling of like movies entertainers or songs entertainers, but when you kind of have that feeling of you have both the content of it, but you're also experiencing the way the artist had to work against the thing, had to shape reality in some way, shape the material world to make this thing. That's part of it for me. But yeah, and it just opened my world up. And it's easy for us to think of like the past, people in the past as being like more primitive in some ways, but you look at some of the artworks they produce and you're like spirituality is kind of timeless. So, like, it doesn't really, it shows up in different ways, but like if it's real, then it's something that you don't need a PhD for. You don't need to be a citizen of an industrialized nation to like get. It's something that has been part of the human experience forever, I think.
Yeah, it's nice to kind of help combat the idea that we all have to be experts about everything. Like, I guess, I mean, someone who is an artist or has studied art or is a sculptor would know like exactly the process that person may have used to make it look like that. But in a way, it almost, and not that this isn't saying that we like don't want to pursue knowledge or things that we're excited about, but in a way, just being, having to be novice and like, wow, that's so powerful. How did they do that? Like, I think that spirit of creativity, it's again that beckoning language of like, I see that and it's not my inclination to be like, oh, I'm gonna go read up on this process and study it and everything. It's an invitation to just sit in the wow. Like, I don't know how that's possible, but it's beautiful. And like, it moves me in a way that I can't explain.
Yeah, I showed my 12-year-old 2001 A Space Odyssey last night, and it was so fun. He was just, for the whole movie, he was just like, how did they film this? What's going on? What is happening? And I was just like, buddy, these are all the right questions. Like, this is how everybody feels watching this movie. And, but he's also like smiling, and he was just like totally enwrapped by it. And yeah, so like, and well, yeah, we're gonna look up a video, see if we can find out how they filmed it. But like, that's not changing the experience of actually seeing it, and it just kind of melts your brain, like, you mm-hmm. know. And that's wonderful in some ways that can happen. If you can let yourself be open to the experience of having your brain melted.
Yeah, and it's, I think one is very answer driven, and one is so much more experiential and mm-hmm. process driven and experience driven. And that, to me, brings about a lot more like meaning and movement.
Yeah.
So we've got love, beauty, and then the last one that you wanted to talk about was community.
Community, sure. And this means like every level of imaginable community, from friends and family to church to city and, you know, et cetera, and, you know, all the political bodies. The one that was important for me all those years ago was thinking actually about this couple we had met through the small group at our E-Free church in Grand Rapids, Ron and Betsy. They were like our parents' ages at the time. So they were in their like around 50. But for whatever reason, we just clicked with these people and we just had the best time with them. And there was one particular evening we were hanging out at their house and had dinner and we're having drinks afterwards. And just, I don't remember what we were talking about, but we were just like laughing uproariously. We couldn't stop laughing. And I just had like a moment, sometimes you have that, like, you step out of the experience just briefly enough to recognize that this is, because something's happening here. Mm-hmm. And I was like, these people are my parents' age. They have such different backgrounds than either of us. They're not intellectuals like me, which I thought was really important to me. And yet we're having the best time, and this feels magical, this experience right now. And that's the kind of thing I chase in community, is like just finding, not just like, not necessarily like uproarious laughter, of course that's awesome, but like that sense of when you get together with people and there's a buoyancy that evolves and emerges, where what's happening in the group is more than anybody brought to the situation. That's hard to find, but it can happen, and I think it happens probably more often in informal settings and in situations maybe than informal ones. Like it's probably more likely to happen when you're packing the neighboring bags and just like chatting and possibly during like the conversation, you know, during communion or at the picnic or something. Like you're more likely to have those moments when you're just feeling like, this is like, I'm experiencing more here. Like I'm feeling the buoyancy of this. Then like right now, like you're probably not feeling super buoyant right now, which is fine. But I think when community is working really well, it has that effect of getting me to not be thinking just about myself, but like really being present with other people. I guess what it comes down to.
Yeah, and I think of too that those moments typically don't just come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like, it maybe is possible to have this happen with a stranger or someone you like have just met, to have that almost like magical, bigger than yourself, mysterious feeling. But typically, I think it comes out of communal settings where you've actually done a lot of work and have spent a lot of time together.
Yeah, definitely.
Like all of my closest friends that, it's not even just like them allowing me to be my realist self and unpolished, imperfect self, but it also, they encourage me to be the most grounded and present self too. And that commitment to being present with one another and fully present, I think that's where some of this mysterious, like, there's another element of things going on here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a formula, it's just happening on its own. And you can kind of feel that when things just click into place, when it feels like the most, like, perfect dinner you've ever had with I don't know, there's just, like, some element that draws us out of ourselves, definitely. But I think, too, you've kind of named this already, but we have this feeling of an element beyond ourselves when we are gathered with our immediate circles, our just like immediate community, but then this can happen on a much wider scale too. And I think when we're encouraging this idea of mystery beckoning us forward, it gives us kind of an antidote to a lot of other mentalities of how the world is structured, how we should participate. So I'm just interested for you, like the idea of ethics and meaning making, like how does mystery inform that?
Yeah. So for me, I think, and this goes without getting too philosophical, but inevitably somewhat philosophical. Mm-hmm. When we talk about like what we really know and what we can build like society on, and our politics and our ethics and our, you know, all these things that we're theorizing about, like how do we know what those things are? What's the bottom? What's the first rung of the ladder? Or what's the ground that the ladder is placed on, right? And I think fundamentally that requires a leap of faith. You have to like affirm something that because you believe it and not because we can know it for sure. And what I mean by that is you kind of say, we see this playing out all over the world right now. We see it playing out in our politics in this country. There's camps of people who believe that the world is fundamentally a violent place and you have to fight for your things, you have to defend your stuff, you have to, you know, make sure you're taking care of your people, take care of your resources, and just, you're always huddling up and you're fighting to survive. And you can build the whole ethics on that. You know, if you took philosophy, you might have studied Thomas Hobbes. Like, he starts with that. You know, life is cold, brutal, and short, or something like that, harsh, brutal, and short. But there's a whole other way that many traditions start with, but, you know, Jesus points us to as well, which is to say, no, we start with love, mm-hmm. right? We start with connections between people. And and love as not just, again, not just the thing that feels good, but as a word for what we, our response to mystery, to the reality of mystery, and that, again, calls us beyond ourselves and connects us to other people, and that which we can build on, and we can kind of say, no, it's not, we don't need to hoard the resources and always think about defending ourselves. We can think about, how do we take care of one another? How do we connect one another? So those are very fundamental questions, and ultimately those are faith things. Whether you think the world is based on love or violence is going to be a faith thing. I don't know, science isn't going to really prove that for us in a satisfying way, right? But we do all act on it in some way, and we make choices socially and politically and financially on the basis of that fundamental belief. Is that mystery real? Is that thing that calls me beyond myself, is that a real thing that I can give myself to, become vulnerable to, and step out of myself into, and get involved, coming in? You know, for me, it's just coming every Sunday morning to church, because it's like, there's a part of me that, you know, that inertia of just being home and tired and not wanting to go out, right? But it can also be, you know, like maybe getting involved politically, like I'm thinking about doing some phone banking or something, because it's like there's my interest in politics is that I think I should be making choices not just for what's good for me, but what's good for as many people as we can make things good for. Mm-hmm. And so if I can be part of helping with that, that's probably a good way to spend my time, right? And my energy and possibly a way. In fact, one of the intellectuals I like on Twitter, his name's David Dark. He would call that, he likes to say, there's so many ways to love God. And so when he sees people doing things like phone banking, he would, you know, he might retweet that and say, there's so many ways to love God. Because getting out of yourself and connecting and caring and being vulnerable and having that sort of courage to be vulnerable, Brené Brown, like we can call that loving God. Like that we don't have to always look for like these mountaintop experiences. I think mystery, actually we encounter it all the time, and we can just name it that.
Yeah, I think of a writer and just person that I return to often, Cole Arthur Riley, talks about the difference that you're getting at here of the, do we see the world as fundamentally like violent and cold and cruel, or do we see it on the fundamental basis of love? And she says that you don't really need to convince people that the world is bad and in need of saving, like that's not really a worthwhile task, but instead it takes so much more willingness and openness to say, no, the world is fundamentally good and worthy of our participation and our love and our healing. And that hearing those differences expressed has just been really important to me. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I wanted to mention too, I think that sometimes we think if we're acknowledging that, oh, things are mysterious, and mystery is at play, that we think we have to be completely uncertain about everything. But that's not the case. You can kind of have a both and this idea of like all these different ways of loving God. Like you can be certain that when you are participating in the flow of love and justice in the world, like that is certainty to stand on, and the way it plays out is mysterious. Yeah. Or you can say that there are like certain things that you do fully believe and you can hold mystery at the same time.
Yeah. Or sometimes I'll use confident instead, just because like certainty, like there's so many connotations with that. But like I'm confident I've had real experiences of mystery and that those experiences are resonating with some reality of the universe. Like I'm very confident about that, even though again, I'm not going to be able to, I could write a whole book about it and not feel like I actually got a grasp of the thing. But yeah, I can still say I'm confident about it and I don't mind telling people about it.
Yes, I love that. Confident about mystery. It's good. Well, thank you so much, Brad, for being up here and sharing this with us. Can we give him a round of applause? So as we close in prayer, I came across a poem from one of my favorite poets, Mary Oliver, earlier this week, and I would love to just use that poem as a prayer for all of us. If you want to get settled in your seat and just take the time to take a few deep breaths, we often don't slow down enough to fully breathe deeply. Just take a moment here. And you can either close your eyes as you listen, or we will also have the poem up on the screen if you would like to read along. Truly we live with mysteries too marvelous to be understood. How grass can be nourishing in the mouths of lambs. How rivers and stones are forever in allegiance with gravity, while we ourselves dream of rising. How two hands touch, and the bonds will never be broken. How people come from delight or the scars of damage to the comfort of a poem. Let me keep my distance always from those who think they have the answers. Let me keep company always with those who say, look, and laugh in astonishment and bow their heads. And so, God, as we dwell in the mystery of it all, would we have these moments where we look and we laugh in astonishment and we take a posture of humility in the midst of that? Would you slow us down from these demands to always have the answers, to feel like we need to be absolutely holding on to certainty in all areas of life in order to be getting it right? Instead, would we have an open confidence in what we know to be true, making ample room for what we don't quite know? Would we be confident in love and mercy and justice that beckons us forward? Would we see the unknown as full of the whole range of possibilities? Would we hold what is and what could be? Would we take the time to marvel and to wonder and to be curious? And would that curiosity not feel like a threat to our faith and to our understanding, but would it draw us deeper into your presence, into our view of who you are and how you act in the world? And would our understanding be forever deepened by the way that we engage with community as our stories intertwine in mysterious ways, as we are connected to a God of love by participating in love? Would you settle us and collect us and ground us in all of the possibilities? Amen.